I want you to close your eyes for a second and just picture a bank.
Okay, yeah. Heavy polished marble floors.
Right, exactly. Thick glass everywhere. Maybe a security guard looking totally bored.
And a vault. Obviously, a massive steel reinforced room right in the back where all the money actually lives.
Definitely the malt. That is the classic image we all have. It screams reliability through architecture, you know?
Yeah, it's meant to make you feel safe putting your life savings there.
Exactly. But today we are completely throwing that image out the window. We are doing a deep dive into a really fascinating blueprint. It is a literal feasibility study or a Durasat Jadwa for a brand new bank in Saudi Arabia.
But this one has absolutely zero marble.
Zero marble, no vault, no physical branches at all. It is a fully digital startup bank in the kingdom.
And yet the numbers they are throwing around are wild.
They are. The document projects that in just 5 years, this invisible bank could be pulling in 1.7 billion Saudi rials in revenue.
Which is just a staggering number for a startup.
A massive number. And honestly, when I first saw that figure right next to a startup plan, my immediate thought was, okay, this is too good to be true. So our mission for this deep dive is simple. We need to figure out if this business idea is an absolute gold mine or just a giant money pit.
Right, because those are very different outcomes.
Very. So we are going to tear apart the financials, the competition, and this really specific conditional verdict the consultants gave them.
And that conditional part is crucial to keep in mind. This report isn't a victory lap. It is a survival guide for a startup trying to break into one of the most fiercely competitive sectors in the KSA, armed with basically nothing but code.
Yeah, nothing but code and a dream. But before we get into the how and specifically that startup cost, which is so low, it shocked me, we need to look at the where. Why Saudi Arabia and why right now?
You really can't separate this feasibility study from the macro environment. I mean, if you look at the pestle analysis in the report, the political and social factors are just flashing bright green right now.
Cause of Vision 2030.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have Vision 2030, which is actively pushing this.
Sure, we hear Vision 2030 mentioned constantly in business. But what does that practically mean for a bank?
It means the government is actively trying to kill cash. Their stated goal is to have 70% non-cash transactions by 2030. And if you live in Riyadh or Jeddah right now, you know this is already the reality.
Oh, absolutely. You buy your morning coffee with your watch.
You pay for your parking with an app.
The friction of cash is just completely disappearing. I actually panic a little bit now if a place only takes cash because I never carry it.
Precisely. That behavior change is the exact wave this startup is trying to ride. The study breaks down this massive opportunity using the TAM-SAM-SAM-SAM model.
Okay, I always get this alphabet soup mixed up. Break those down for us.
Think of it like commercial fishing. TAM is the total addressable market. That is the entire ocean of the banking sector in Saudi Arabia.
The whole ocean.
Right. And the study values that whole ocean at 50 billion SAR.
Okay, so that includes the massive giants like Al Rajhi SMB, everyone.
Exactly. But a tiny startup boat can't catch every fish in the ocean. So you narrow it down to the SAM, the serviceable available market. This is specifically the digital banking slice of the pie.
And how big is that slice?
That is about 17 billion SAR. That is the area where it actually makes sense for this specific boat to cast its nets.
Got it. And then SOM.
Serviceable obtainable market. That is the fish they actually think they can haul onto the boat. They are targeting 1.7 billion SAR.
Basically 10% of the digital market.
Exactly 10%.
Hold on a second. 10%. That sounds incredibly optimistic. I mean, you've got STC Pay, you've got the legacy banks dominating. Is a 10% market share for a brand new player even realistic?
It is extremely aggressive. Most startups are thrilled fighting for 1 or 2% in their first few years. Aiming for 10 implies they don't just want to join the market. They plan to completely disrupt it.
And how do they justify that confidence?
They are heavily leaning into what they call the market gap, specifically the user experience. Yeah. The study argues that while the big legacy banks all have apps, those apps are essentially just digital adaptations of physical banking
Do
processes.
they feel clunky?
Very clunky. They run on legacy systems that take forever to update. This startup wants to be digital native from day one. They want the banking experience to feel like you're using Spotify or TikTok. Fast, intuitive, highly personalized.
So they are betting that people are annoyed enough with their current clunky banking app to actually go through the hassle of switching.
Yes, they are. And they aren't just targeting everyone. They are targeting specific demographics who are the most likely to be fed up. The study outlines four very distinct personas.
Who are they going after?
First is the tech-savvy millennial.
Okay, that makes sense. That's the low-hanging fruit, the guy in Riyadh who wants a sleek dashboard for his entire financial life.
Right, exactly. But then it gets more strategic. The second persona is the Gen Z student.
See, that one surprised me. Students usually have zero money. Why build a highly advanced bank for people with empty pockets?
It is all about customer lifetime value. Big banks often completely ignore college students because their deposits are so small that it actually costs the bank more to service them than they make back in fees.
Right. There's no immediate ROI.
But if you capture that user at 19 with a really cool app and some gamified financial literacy tools, who do you think they are going to use for their auto loan at 24 or their mortgage at 30?
So you are planting seeds early.
Exactly. You acquire them when they are cheap to acquire. Then you have the third persona,
yes,
the SME owner. Small and medium enterprises.
I know a few of these folks. They are usually totally drowning in paperwork.
Drowning in paperwork and bleeding from transaction fees. Traditional banks charge pretty high merchant fees for businesses. This digital bank is promising to dramatically slash those operational costs.
Which is huge.
It is. If you are running a local coffee shop on razor-thin margins, saving even 1% on transaction fees across the year is a massive deal, is a huge pain point.
Absolutely. And the fourth persona?
The unbanked.
Really? Is the unbanked still a large demographic in the kingdom today?
It is definitely shrinking, but it is still there. You have people in remote areas or lower-income workers who simply cannot maintain the strict minimum balances required by a gold or platinum account at a traditional big bank.
So they just get locked out of the system.
Completely. Digital banking completely lowers that barrier to entry. You don't need to build a brick-and-mortar branch in their village. You just need them to have a cheap smartphone and an internet connection.
Okay, so the master plan is grab the kids, grab the small businesses, and grab the people the big guys forgot about. It sounds like a really solid strategy on paper. But let's pivot to the part of the feasibility study that literally made my jaw drop. The price tag.
The initial startup cost.
Yes, because the document estimates the total startup cost to launch this bank at $5.25 million the jot.
That is the figure they landed on.
$5.25 million. To start a bank. I feel like I could even buy a decent standalone villa in a nice neighborhood in Jeddah for that price, let alone launch a registered financial institution. How is that even mathematically possible?
It really highlights the stark difference between being asset heavy and asset light. If you're building a traditional bank, 5 million rials wouldn't even cover the architectural plans and the land purchase for your headquarters.
Let alone the vault.
Exactly. But here, look at the breakdown in the study. The rent line item is practically zero. They just need a modest office space for a very small executive team.
So where is the $5.25 million actually going?
It is almost entirely going toward intellectual property and permission to operate. 1 million SAR is strictly allocated for website and app development. They are building a virtual branch.
Okay.
And another $500,000 goes straight to licenses and regulatory permits.
But wait back up to that app development cost. 1 million rials for the app. That seems incredibly light to me. If their whole value proposition is that they're the Spotify of banking, can you really build a world-class, secure, hacking-proof banking infrastructure for 1 million rials?
That is a very valid skepticism, and it is one the report hints at. That 1 million is highly likely just for the MVP, the minimum viable product.
Just the bare bones to prove it works.
Exactly. It gets you in the App Store. It allows basic transfers. It does not get you the advanced AI-driven features or the fully automated loan approvals they want long-term. And if we look at the staffing plan, your skepticism is only going to deepen.
Oh, I was looking at that human resources section earlier.
It is extremely lean.
Lean. It is practically anorexic. They have listed a CEO, a CTO, and five developers, to run an entire bank.
It sounds absolutely crazy, doesn't it?
It sounds totally impossible. If I'm trusting you with my monthly paycheck, I want to know there are more than five guys sitting in a room somewhere making sure the servers don't melt down.
This right here is the high-risk nature of this specific feasibility study. They are relying super heavily on extreme automation and third-party APIs. They aren't building their own payment processing rails from scratch.
They are just plucking into existing architecture.
Right. But you are totally right. Five developers is basically a weekend hackathon team. It is not a mature banking IT department. That headcount is going to have to explode if they actually start inching toward that 10% market share.
Okay, so let's say they launch with this skeleton crew. They spend their 5 million rials. The app goes live. Then comes the phase the report affectionately calls the valley of death.
The cash flow projection, yes. This is where startup dreams usually go to die.
Walk us through those numbers, because they are scary.
In year one, they are projecting a revenue of negative 2 million SAR. They are basically setting cash on fire every single day.
Wow.
Cloud servers, marketing salaries, it is all going out and nowhere near enough is coming in.
And they only have a total capital buffer of what? The study recommends raising 6 million total. So if they burn 2 million in just year one.
They're cutting it incredibly close. They project finally turning a profit in year two of about 1.5 million SAR. The actual break-even point where they stop bleeding cash is projected at month 24.
So for two full years, the founders and the investors are just holding their breath, watching the bank account drain.
Hoping and praying the user growth curve catches up before the runway ends.
If it doesn't.
Game over, the lights go out, the app stops working, everyone goes home.
That is absolutely terrifying. But okay, let's play the optimist here. Let's say they survive the valley of death. Let's say those five developers are absolute geniuses and the app goes viral. The study says by 2028, revenue hits $1.7 billion. Where is that actual money coming from? Is it all just from charging transaction fees?
No, and this is a really important point. Even though they are branding themselves as a cool, agile tech company, the underlying business model is very old school banking. 60% of that $1.7 billion is projected to come from interest income.
So loans.
Loans, credit cards, microfinancing.
So they still have to lend money to make money.
Exactly. And that raises another massive hurdle. To lend 1.7 billion rials worth of interest-generating capital, you need a huge balance sheet. You need deposits. You need everyday people to actually keep their entire salaries inside this app, not just load 50 bucks onto it to pay for coffee.
And that introduces the trust gap. It is super easy to trust a new colorful app with 50 rials for lunch. It is a whole different ballgame to trust it with my entire life savings or my business payroll.
Which brings us right to the competition, the massive entities that are currently holding all those paychecks.
The antagonists in our startup story.
You have STC Pay, you have El Raji Bank, you have SNB. The study lists STC Pay as currently holding an estimated 25% of the digital wallet market. El Raji has 30%.
These aren't just minor competitors. These are foundational institutions.
Right.
And I mean, I use STC Pay. It works flawlessly. It is accepted everywhere. Why on earth would I go through the effort to switch?
That is the buyer power aspect of the Porter's Five Forces analysis they ran. Buyer power in this specific industry is extremely high.
Meaning I have all the leverage as a consumer.
Exactly. It costs you absolutely nothing to download a new app and switch.
Mm-hmm.
But the terrifying flip side for the startup is that it costs you nothing to leave them either. If this new digital bank launches and the app crashes exactly one time while you're trying to pay for groceries,
I am deleting it immediately.
You are gone. You go right back to El Raji.
So brand loyalty is basically dead.
In a digital banking space.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Loyalty is simply a function of your last 5 seconds of user experience.
So how do they possibly win this war? If they cannot outspend El Raji on marketing and they cannot out-network STC, Pay, what is their actual moat? What protects this startup from just getting crushed?
The study does a really interesting VRIO analysis looking for value, rarity, imitability, and organization. And they actually admit right in the report that their technology is not a moat.
Really? A tech startup admitting their tech isn't special.
Yeah, because El Raji has bottomless pockets.
Mm-hmm.
If this startup introduces a cool new pie chart feature, El Raji could just hire 100 developers tomorrow and copy that exact code in a week.
That makes sense. So what is the real moat?
The report claims the only sustainable advantage they have is customer data insights.
Data.
Yes. The theory goes like this. Because they are fully digital native from the ground up, their entire architecture is built to track and analyze user behavior infinitely better than legacy banks.
Who are stuck with ancient databases.
Right. So this startup can actually predict what you need before you even search for it. For example, their algorithm notices you are a university student and it sees that it is late August.
Right before the semester starts.
Exactly. So the app automatically sends you a push notification offering a pre-approved back-to-school microloan for a new laptop at a competitive rate.
Wow.
Right at the exact moment you were stressing about how to afford one.
So the battle isn't about the size of the vault anymore. It is entirely about the algorithm's IQ.
Correct. The big traditional banks have all the capital in the world, but they're often just drowning in messy, unorganized, siloed data. This startup is incredibly agile. They can turn raw data into a personalized financial product instantly. That is their unfair advantage.
It sounds amazing, but it relies entirely on absolutely flawless execution.
Which brings us to the final verdict of this whole Dirasat Jadhwa. The consultants actually gave this project a final viability score.
They did. 78 out of 100.
Which is like a solid C+. I mean, it's passing, but it's not exactly valedictorian material.
And that score directly reflects the immense risk involved. The study explicitly lists cybersecurity and regulatory compliance as high severity risks.
We mentioned cybersecurity earlier. Mm-hmm. With a team of 5 developers, I'm still completely stuck on that. One single hacker finds a backdoor, drains a few accounts, and it is a PR nightmare that a startup literally never wakes up from.
It is 100% an existential threat. A big bank can survive a breach because they have decades of trust built up. A startup dies on day one if they get hacked. And the regulatory compliance is just as dangerous.
Oh, definitely. The Saudi Central Bank SAMA is incredibly strict, and rightly so. If this startup messes up their reporting, or if their anti-money laundering checks slip even a little bit, SAM will shut them down permanently before lunch.
So the final verdict from the study is a conditional go. What exactly are those conditions they laid out?
It is essentially a yes, but only if. You can proceed with this business plan only if condition one, you secure the full 6 million SAR in funding up front. You cannot try to undercapitalize this and wing it.
Makes sense, given the valley of death.
Condition two, you establish incredibly robust enterprise-grade cybersecurity protocols immediately. It cannot be an afterthought once you grow.
No cutting corners on the servers.
Exactly. And condition three, you ensure total full legal compliance with SAMA from day minus one.
So basically execute perfectly or don't even bother starting.
That is the subtext of the whole document.
It is so fascinating. We are looking at a blueprint that outlines a very clear, logical path to a billion rial company. But that path is essentially a tightrope walk over a pit of hungry alligators.
That is the reality of the startup game. But you have to remember, potential reward here is just massive. If this team pulls it off, they don't just build a successful bank. They position themselves to become the underlying financial operating system for an entirely new generation of Saudis.
It fundamentally changes the whole definition of what a bank even is.
It does. It moves the concept of a bank from being a destination, a physical place you have to go to being a utility, something that just seamlessly happens in the background of your life.
And here is my main takeaway for you as you listen to this. Whether you are an investor looking at the market, an entrepreneur, or just someone living and working in the kingdom right now, this feasibility study is a massive signal.
Absolutely.
It is telling us that the era of big banking based solely on physical presence and giant marble buildings is ending. The next financial giant in the region might be a company you have literally never heard of, run by a handful of brilliant people in a tiny office, purely because they understand your data better than the guy in the expensive suit at your local branch.
I think that is spot on. The barrier to entry in finance has dropped significantly, but the actual bar for performance and user experience has skyrocketed.
I want to leave you with a final thought to chew on as we wrap up this deep dive. We used to trust our banks because they looked physically strong. We saw the stone, the marble, the heavy steel doors. We could tangibly see the strength protecting our money. But as we sprint into this world of digital-only banks and 5 million rial startups handling our life savings, we are entirely transferring that trust to code. We are fundamentally trusting that an invisible algorithm is on our side.
And we are trusting that the firewall holds.
And that the firewall holds, absolutely. We will definitely be watching the market closely to see if this conditional go actually turns into the next big unicorn. Thanks for diving deep into the numbers with us today.
Always a pleasure to unpack it.